hear me? Tiara.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well.
It's so good to see you.
You as well. It's nice to do this in person and not over Zoom.
Yeah, I'm a little zoomed out.
My eyes have been like at the end of the week, I can't look at screens any longer.
Have you dreamed about being in a Zoom call yet?
No.
I haven't really either, and I was wondering about that.
But can I tell you the dream I had a couple nights ago?
Sure, of course.
I dreamed an entire alternate version of Hello Dolly that took place in the South. And in my dream, like, I was hearing the lyrics and the songs, and I thought, why did they cast Carol Channing in the Broadway show if it takes place in the South? Like, I get the joke. Oh, she's a New Yorker. This is New York. But it kind of doesn't make sense. And I woke up and I remembered it does take place in Yonkers. And I still remember some of the songs. They were totally new songs.
You maybe have a musical to write in addition to all your other things.
What if I'm a musical theater genius, but only in my dream world?
It's highly possible.
Yeah.
You need to keep a journal by your bed to write down all of those things.
Yeah, and a piano.
It's great to see you. I saw you the other night, but you didn't see me because you're hosting Pitch Black. And
yeah.
I wanted to be respectful. I tried yelling out your name at one point. And I was like, no, that's not going to work.
Hold up a sign in the audience. Yes. Yeah. I was the MC of Pitch Black. Such an honor. Third year I've done that. The event's been going on for 8 years. Not consecutive because of COVID, but it went so well. It was a great event. It's just the energy there and the spirit of community and support for small business there is unparalleled.
Mm. Yeah, I had an amazing time and sat by some cool people I had never met, and everyone was super nice. And I love seeing people pitch because you see the business component. You also see their story or their personality. There was one lady where I was like, she should have a cooking show.
Oh yeah. I love her.
Yeah.
She has really good social media too. You should follow her. That was, Flora, I don't want to say the wrong thing. So we'll put it in the show notes, but
yeah, she was the one who I think you said you could listen to her talk all day. Mm-hmm.
She has such a beautiful voice, and yeah, I want it. She's based out of Salem. She has a African spice company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love those. Like, it's not set it and forget it, but it's like set it and forget it. Rice stroll off.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never attempt that. I don't cook, but I appreciate that someone has that option in the world.
Yeah. So where do I begin? You do a lot of things. They call you the mayoress.
That's what they call me.
How did that start, by the way?
It started because I called me that. It is actually from Stephen Sondheim's musical, Anyone Can Whistle. There's a character called the mayoress in that. And I saw a reading of it and like, oh gosh, probably like 02, 03. And I just thought it was so funny. That word, for some reason, just stuck. And then I just started, my friends started calling me that. And now it's my handle everywhere. But it's funny because I wasn't involved in like local politics or anything then. So now it feels a little embarrassing when I'm interacting with like elected officials.
I think it's because you run things.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me or tell us about kind of your cornucopia of business ventures.
Yeah. My portfolio, a meritage, if you will. So my primary business is called Pregame, and we do strategic planning and professional development, primarily in government now. Started out with startups and entrepreneurs. So we still do work with growing businesses and also nonprofits. It's going really well. I'm really proud of it. I love it. And then some new projects happening this year, especially, you know, I'm on a few boards. I'm on the board of Sport Oregon and Business for a Better Portland. I'm on Governor Kotek's Racial Justice Committee, her economic subcommittee. And we talk a lot about like workforce development and business procurement, things like that. So I've been doing that for a few years. And then my 2024 projects are producing a documentary, which I don't want to get into too much yet. But yes, I'm producing a documentary film. And I launched a show called Portland Tea Party.
Can you talk about Portland Tea Party?
Oh, I sure can.
Can you spill the tea?
I can spill the tea on the tea party. Yeah, it was a joke with my leadership group. And because we were talking about the tea, and I said, I'm going to start a show called Portland Tea Party, and it's going to be about everything going on in the city. And so that's what it is. It's about Portland, especially the city transition to the new form of government. The tea, like, you know, we don't want to destroy lives. So it's gossip, but it's like, what's the real story behind what you're doing and your career and how you got here? And then the party, what's happening in Portland, because people act like Portland's like, you know, there's all this discussion about Portland and revitalization and everything. And there's plenty of really cool things happening now.
Oh, where people say like Portland's over, Portland's dead. And I'm like, no,
yeah, like there's really tons of stuff. Yeah. So I just want to highlight the cool things that are happening now and get people out and about and supporting local business.
Mm. It also seems like it's a forum to see people as whole. They're not just a district attorney, or they're not just a person. You know, we sort of do that with people. We put them into their role as just that one thing, but they're also potentially, you know, a father and a husband, and they have a story and they have hobbies.
Yeah, and they're probably doing their best. I mean, we can debate that for a long time, but, you know, all the local leaders I've had a chance to work with in my business the last few years, like, they are all lovely people and they're all doing their absolute best every single day. And so, you know, I don't already know everybody that I'm interviewing, but, you know, the lofty goals are to show leaders as humans and to reduce the polarization of like, oh, there's only one way to think about an issue. And I'm trying to bring these topics as 101, because the news always starts in the middle of the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of my friends who are very smart, you know, like have master's degrees and they're executives and things, like, they don't know how this city and the county and metro and work and who does what, you know, like, it's very hard to understand.
Yeah, I mean, we're smart people and we're in it, and I still don't understand. And
exactly.
I have moments where I'm like, oh, I didn't know Metro did that.
Exactly. And so just the 101 of like, what is the Oregon legislative session? Like, what does the city transition committee do? What don't they do? Because what happens, too, is we get mad at people a lot when they're not the people in charge of the thing.
Yeah.
And people get elected by talking about issues that they have almost no impact on. It drives me crazy.
How much time do you have for that one? Yeah. Yeah, that's a major issue, is being a policy bureaucrat and then prescribing what should happen versus asking people who are actually doing the thing, like, hey, what do you need?
Yeah, I had a conversation just before this. You know, we were doing some engagement for a bureau and talking to people, and you know, they pointed out, like, we're the experts because we're the ones on the ground doing the work. Like, just ask us. We have the solutions.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I've been shocked about. I mean, I kind of thought that it was that way, but I've lately been talking to folks, and it's been affirmed that people who you thought should be at the table or not. So, you know, it makes me want to bang my head against the wall.
Yeah, all the time.
And so I like that you're seeing people as people and you're kind of talking to them about a variety of things. Are there questions that you want to ask that you don't? Have you been asking questions? Like, how do you come up with what kind of questions you ask, for example?
Well, we're only 5 episodes in, so I'm still getting there, but I've only talked to one elected official so far, and already I could see that my challenge is going to be getting them to kind of drop the talking points, especially it's short. You know, it's not like an hour where you have time to explore and like make people cry. But I really want to know, like,
what love is.
Yeah, well, that too. But I want you to show me.
There you go. Wow.
All right. I want to know who they talk to on a bad day and like what they do and how they deal with, you know, and of course you can't always fully disclose all of that stuff in a 5-minute interview, but again, it's the human side.
You raised a good point though, that, you know, it's often the people who don't do politics or they're not involved and then they criticize and it's often like a, you know, fuck them and you know, all these politicians are this or that, but you raise a good point that there's a deeper, you know, are they well-intentioned? What's the full story? Is this something that was difficult because of the way that the city government was organized? And I'm not saying that people aren't to blame or shouldn't be held accountable, but there's more to the story, and we live in this kind of like non-critical thinking moment.
Yeah,
of,
like 280 characters of forming an opinion. And, you know, I wrote an editorial the last election. I don't know if I wasn't direct enough, or, you know, people aren't reading the whole editorial too, but, you know, I just think we vote the wrong way. I want people to vote as though they're interviewing somebody for a job, and not vote based on who you like or who you don't like. Who is the best person for this job holistically? Like, I'm picturing, like, are you staring at one individual chess piece and saying like, oh, I like this rook versus the other rook? No, you got to look at the whole chessboard and like, how are we going to collectively win the game? And we get so focused on like, oh, she did this thing that one time. And it's like, no, holistically,
yeah,
who is going to be best for the causes that you care about? It almost doesn't matter if you like them. Who's going to do the best job?
Well, it's also there's like a burn it all ground type of progressivism. There's also like the expression, throwing out progress for perfection, right?
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's not going to be perfect, but you're going to get the thing, or get the thing in place, and then we'll make it better.
I'm very critical of that, and I'll give you an exact example. And I'll give you this example because it's not just to put the agency on blast, because I've told them this directly. So
let me get my popcorn out.
Everyone get comfortable. I've talked to them about this directly. It's kind of like a friendly spar, I think, that we have going on. But, well, and here's the other thing, is that in Portland, you're not allowed to criticize things in a discussion format, because people take things really personally and shut down right away. Mm-hmm. Versus, like, if you're really trying to have a conversation,
we're never going to solve any real issues if we don't have real conversations.
Yeah.
Everything's going to remain surface level.
Well, yeah, it's a big problem. And we worry about, like, I've noticed the more leaders I meet, how we mistake people who are nice with people who are effective. Like, oh, that's a nice person, they must be good at their job. Those two things don't necessarily follow. So going back to the example, for example, there are, you know, some websites that Prosper Portland puts out to try to help small business. And there is one that was like a post-COVID like business navigator. And they put up a version of it. It was a pretty website. I was impressed by that. I didn't think it was by Prosper at first, just because, you know, the city website looks so different.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And some of them look like they're made in like 1998.
Yeah, exactly. But this one looked current. It was like pretty, you know. And but then when you look at the resources, it only offered like four different coaches, for example, you know, and there's like way too many coaches in the world, but like there's no description of how they vet. And so I was like, why don't you keep that updated? Or like, why isn't there a small business resource website? You know, and they're like, oh, it's too hard to always keep it updated. It won't always be updated. It's like, well, that doesn't mean we don't try at all. Like, launch it 50% complete, and then the next month get it to 60%. And then
You do the thing, and then you set goals on how to better. And it's a process. It's not a like, get this up, which is kind of like with everything they do. It's like with DEI statements. I'm not talking about Prosper. I'm talking about people who sort of like do the thing to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And then they don't better it or evaluate it or reflect upon it.
Well, this is the framework that I'm obsessed with right now, is there's two kinds of progressivism. I'm sure there's many kinds, but the framework I'm talking about is, there's abundance progressivism, which is focused on a result. And then there's, is it called movement progressivism, which is focused on the process. And I think they're both from great motivations. Like, if I'm a movement progressive, I care a lot about process because I don't want to leave anyone out. I want to make sure everyone's voices are heard. Like, that's a great motive, you know? And so from that perspective, I'm going to make sure the website is translated into all 13 languages before it launches. I'm going to make sure it has full accessibility. I'm going to make sure it has like, you know, equitable distribution of resources throughout the city geographically. Like, I'm going to make sure all those things. But guess what happens? 4 years pass and it doesn't launch. Mm. That's the risk of that. So I fall way more on the side, and I suspect you do too, of abundance progressivism.
Yeah.
Which is, we got to get the thing done.
I mean, same thing that you're describing, I feel, with housing and food insecurity and mental health. Like, we're sort of like
absolute paralysis.
Everyone's an expert and everyone knows about theory and everyone does. And it's sort of, we just go in circles. But if you really do have a humanitarian crisis, you make a plot of land and you let people camp there, or you get someone into a program immediately. Like, we sort of we don't meet the moment because we're doing theoretical things or analytical things. And I'm someone who has 3 degrees and I love being academic, but if someone's dying or starving,
right,
you figure out a way to do it and you do it right away.
Here's the first thing. Here's a mayoress action right now.
Yes.
We make a scale of emergency.
I wish I had like a sound effect. We don't have any.
it's the rap air horn. Yeah. So this is what we need to do. Why do people call something an emergency and then not treat it like an emergency?
I don't know. It drives me nuts.
Like politicians,
it absolutely drives
right?
me nuts.
So if something's an emergency, I want you to react like it's like
correct.
Something's on fire.
Correct.
Right.
Like not having teachers or nurses in the United States. Like seems like a big deal.
Is it an emergency? Well, but maybe we need levels. Like I always think of like the Smokey the Bear fire risk thing. We all know camping. We all
Only
know about fire risk.
Only you can save forest fires. That doesn't make sense. Only you can save the forest?
Or prevent forest.
Prevent. That's the word I was looking for. Prevent.
But I think this would be such a good tool for regular people to understand, like, oh, this is a blue emergency means we need to prioritize putting money this way. Or a red emergency means we're going to build a hospital in your front yard because
But how can something
COVID.
Be a humanitarian crisis and then have it be like 2 years for affordable housing permitting or... Oh,
but that's
well,
what I'm
let's
saying.
Study that, and then we'll hire someone else to study it. Then we'll talk about the studies. Then we'll hire another expert to interpret the study.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you from my perspective, from the agencies that we work with, they have to do all those studies to not get sued, mm-hmm. right? So there can be something that's very obviously true, but then the government's going to be tied up in lawsuits because unless you can prove that it's true... You know, like I could have told you the result of this $250,000 study yesterday, but they had to do that due diligence to be able to prove there was that disparity and they needed to put resources in that direction.
Well, I get all that and that has to happen.
Yeah.
But if people are starving or need a place, I mean, can you imagine like being in that position and being told like you have to wait for this bureaucratic process and you're just like, I just need basic needs.
I can, of course, all of us can imagine that. I mean, look at how hard it is just to do anything healthcare related, even if you have means. I have health insurance.
Yeah. Are you in network or out network?
Yeah, I know how to work systems. Right. But like, I just want to go to the dermatologist. It's like a 6-month wait.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and then people are like, oh no, this is a great system. So there's just a lot of things happening that are issues that matter to people. And they don't think anything's being done. And of course they don't.
But then when you talk to them, they're an expert or have their own way. Or, we're working on that. We're working on that. Just be patient.
Well, it is really tricky because I do have friends who work on some of these problems. And I truly believe they are working hard and doing their best and are smart people. And it can be really hard to figure out where the actual point of... Like, what is actually holding everything back? Because you're like, okay, this equation doesn't make sense. Really obvious problem, public support for fixing the problem, smart people working on the problem, resources for the problem, but, like, it's not being solved.
Well, the other worry that I have is there's this, not to talk about all the worries, but there's this. The other worry is those things are actually getting done or being worked on. Like, the state legislature is working on affordable housing and all that. The definition of affordable housing is not affordable. So my other worry is we're going to green light things that are potential solutions, but because the people who are actually involved didn't get to say what those plans would be, or they don't match the region or the facts, we'll end up having tons and tons more what we're calling affordable housing that won't be affordable. So that's the other thing is we get to solutions, but then the solutions don't actually match what was needed at all. They don't reflect...
Yeah. Well, that could be part of the problem of paying too much attention to the system and not to the result. So there's this amazing book by, I believe, Jennifer Palka, and it's called Recoding America. She's a tech expert. She was brought in to fix healthcare.gov.
I've had like 5 people recommend this book.
It's the best.
I need to read this book.
I haven't even finished it, and I'm already radicalized. But she talks a lot about, you know, the problem is like if you are working, you know, a normal manager in the government, you have got these checklists that you've got to check to keep your job. You know, you don't have the freedom of creativity and innovation and doing things differently this time because there are actual laws around how the thing must be done. So if I had checked all the boxes perfectly when procuring like a web development company for this government website, you could still end up with the worst option because, for example, in Oregon, you know, in some procurement, you have to pick the lowest bid. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? Since when is the lowest price the best solution? Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that sounds good for taxpayers. And I'm sure like at some point, like a state senator
but
or somebody.
But if it's a website that's really important for the vitality of people, you right. probably want to spend a little bit more.
But electeds and the people who make policy are not thinking long term. They're thinking about their next election and they're only mm-hmm. 2 years in and then they got to start fundraising and running again. So they only care about, you know, I should say, I'm not going to say they don't care. I'm saying they're only incentivized to care about the things that can get them through the next sure. election. So if something's going to take 10 years to come to fruition, why?
And what you're talking about, not to go broader, but it is broader because everything else that we care about, moral imperatives, there is no incentive. So, you know, healthcare, why would healthcare companies go cheaper or have more access? Gasoline, fuel, food systems. I mean, everything we look at that we actually need that's important, there's money in that. And if you make the thing more streamlined, the people who have the power lose the money and the control. So we tie moral imperatives sometimes to financial gain. And then we expect utility companies too. And then we expect them to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's so tricky. I mean, yeah, capitalism. Capitalism is usually the answer. And I'm not totally anti-capitalist. Like I'm a business person. And the thing I like about capitalism is it's like a very clear game. Like yeah. there's one object of the game. Like when people are mystified by like, why is Target closing in Portland? I'm like, there's only one explanation why a business ever closes. It's because it's not making enough money. Yeah. That's the only reason yeah. there ever is. All right. But when you have other things like even a nonprofit, you know, like it gets fuzzy because they got to fund it. You know, they've got to add programs in order to get the grant, unless the grant, you know, most grants don't go for their like main costs, right? So like these, you're right, there's conflicting interests. And, you know, I'm not conspiracy theorist about stuff. Like I do think people are doing their best jobs, but in yeah. general, not everyone, but in
general.
Well,
I'm like you, you know, I'm not anti-capitalist either. I'm kind of like an Elizabeth Warren or Katie Porter Democrat, right? Like I believe business can be for good, and I believe yeah. that they can pay their fair taxes, and we can have big business and small business work together. It's businesses. I mean, we've seen stuff about the inflation that a lot of it's corporate greed. But I guess what I'm trying to say is whether it's building affordable housing, whether it's healthcare, whether it's the environment, we keep trying for progressive movements. And then we're up against corporate greed. And then we sit here and we go, oh, well, why is nothing working out? Or why is this? And it's like, the answer is you can't have a moral imperative argue or go up against corporate greed. The corporate greed's always going to win.
Yeah, in this system, for sure. I mean, there's probably some counterexamples. I can't think of
Ben and Jerry's.
Right now. Well, that's exactly it.
Ice cream with a cause. Maybe yeah, I want ice cream right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's do that after this. But I think what's really happening is, listen, I will be harder on progressives and people on the left than I am on people on the right because they're not listening to yeah. me. But progressives, Democrats, we need to explain ourselves better and not over explain.
I mean, yeah.
you know, I've had some interesting debates with people. And so when you get really binary and say something like capitalism sucks, well, not all like yeah. when we sit down and talk about it, it's never all capitalism. It's never, you know, but it's just yeah. easier to have that like tweetable.
Or you can't fight something that's not going away. So the question is, how do we have more corporate responsibility or
exactly.
more corporate accountability? But
let's
yeah, I don't do well. I don't do well with the like burn it all down.
No, I don't either.
Fuck them. Fuck corporations. It's like, no, it's that's not.
I think there's a place for burn it all down people. I'm not one of them. I'm learn the game in order to change the game in order to win the game. All right. That's like my whole MO. So there are ways to do business in a way that is a win-win.
Yeah.
That's
so
the
tell
whole
us,
basis of my
I'm
business.
I'm sipping my tea
sure.
again. Tell us, the listeners, is how do they get in the game and change the game? And
oh, yeah. Let me tell you the whole thing right now. Well, first, let me say, like, this, the way I got to this was one of my first jobs out of college was with a socially responsible mutual fund. And I'm sure that our Reddit friends at home are like, those are a crock. And, you know, okay. But so I was working, you know, I was just doing admin at this mutual fund, and the founder, a woman, thank you. You know, she was realizing there's a way to invest and be an activist investor. And, you know, no one I knew was talking about any of this yet, but they basically had a legal team that would write letters to companies and say, we're not investing in you in our index fund because you don't meet these criteria we have for social responsibility. And so it just, it shaped me from, you know, age 22 of like, oh, you can use business and like making money to do good. And I will say I've seen in my business that there are times that we can do more good faster than in like a nonprofit. It drives me crazy that nonprofits, you know, are the only ones who qualify for like grants, for example, because, you know, I could probably train 10 entrepreneurs to success a lot faster and for cheaper than, you know, the nonprofit down the street where no one there has experience being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was just saying, nonprofit folks, I love them. I work with them all the time, but you're running a business. You have to treat the nonprofit like a business, and you have nonprofit compliance on top of that. So, but that's a good point, is there are for-profit community-oriented organizations that can do better or more or do as much.
Right, right. And so, you know, again, it's like, what is the result we want? Is the result we want bigger, you know, business growth with economic impact? Do we want to take the best and shortest path there, or do we want to take the one that checks all the boxes? I could argue either way, but I do think there's a trade-off with going in either direction for sure. You asked me how we get in the game, know the game, change the game. So listening to podcasts like this is part of it. But, you know, try to figure out, like, look at everything as a game. It helps me a lot. You know, like, what's the object here? And if you are on different pages with people, like in a group you're working on or something, like that might be the whole thing. Like y'all are coming with different objects of the game, right? Like, what is the point? Like, how do we win here? Let's all agree on that so we can at least find a path forward that fits all of us. If you're negotiating with somebody, figure out where that overlap is. Like, what is the goal we both have in common? What do we both want? And let's start from there. You get it. And then when you figure out maybe what somebody else's object of the game is, you can start helping them to win, right? Or helping them see that your object of the game is better or something. So
you could all be in the same game and want something different from the win. Is that?
Yeah, I think you could. But I think the point is to just be real about what it actually is. So my main example is, of course, like voting in the primaries. So, you know, your way of living your values might seem to be like to be an independent voter because you don't really love either party. But all you're doing is stopping yourself from voting in the Democratic primary in Oregon, because in Oregon, it's worthwhile to be registered as a Democrat because the Democrat almost always wins. And we choose that Democrat in May, not in November. So you better be voting in May if you want to actually affect what's going on. So that is knowing how the game works. And then participating in the game. And if you don't like the way it works, you have opportunities to help change the game. But opting out is not being in the game. That's leaving the stadium.
Yeah, that's a good point. It makes me think of the Republican walkout issue.
Can you imagine just not going to work and still getting paid?
No.
And still getting benefits? How dare you? How dare you
do the job that you wanted? I mean, that
people elected you to do. And, you know, it's like we're taxpayers. We're paying for these people to go to work. They have better benefits than their constituents, and they just don't show up to like make a point.
Yeah. Well, it's like a tantrum or
it's a tantrum.
Teenager thing, like where you like slam the door.
It absolutely is. And then what happened, you know, I learned this just now in my last episode of Portland Tea Party, because we had someone on who's covering the legislature. And then all the bills that were in line to be heard in the last legislative session, they all got pushed to this. Yeah. So don't tell me it's a housing emergency when you walk out and we can't even hear the bill on housing and has to wait 8 months.
Yeah.
And somebody's homeless those 8 months. Correct. Shame on Correct. You. How do you sleep at night? Correct.
And that's the thing, back to the thing of like the processes that we have don't meet the need of basic human rights and needs.
Yeah.
You're from New York, right?
No.
You lived in New York.
Well, how about this? I'm from California originally.
Okay.
I know. But then we moved here when I was in sixth grade.
Yeah. Walk me through all of that.
Well, I don't want to get too specific because people will steal my identity. But
you're not getting your social out.
born in California. We moved to Montana when I was in first grade. That's where my mom's from. We moved to Beaverton when I was in sixth grade. Then I went to college in Seattle, and then I moved to New York City, and I lived there 14 years, and then I came back to Portland, and I've been in Portland almost 10.
And what were all the moves? Just
My family moved around a lot when I was little, and, you know, I went to college, and then New York, I moved there to do theater, and then I moved back to Portland because I was like, why am I in New York? I'm 35. Get me out of here, which everyone does at 35.
Yeah. Do you miss theater stuff or acting stuff? Or?
No. God, no. I did the whole like move to New York to be an actor thing, and I did it, and I did everything wrong, and I did some things right, and I had fun. But I'm somebody who's curious and about a lot of different things. I don't feel like this is the only thing I can do. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how the game worked. I was playing a different game than what is the actual game to be successful in that arena. And I wrote about it. My first book is called Exit Stage Right, A Career Change Handbook for Performers. And it talks about, you know, schools like, you know, your high school theater program or your BFA program, MFA, they do a disservice in that, you know, everybody gets to play every different kind of role and everything. Well, when you get to a business, not an art, you know, hobby or practice, it's running on capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to know how to run yourself like a business in terms of like product development, marketability, like who's the target audience, who's the customer. And so that was actually the most interesting part of it to me. And so, you know, it became clearer and clearer I was really a business person.
You also make me think of myself, not because I'm self-indulgent, but because for a long time, you know, I thought I was broken because I'm interested in so many different things.
And
you feel kind of all over the place. And I think people who are listening maybe feel that way, you know? And so, yeah, you're a businesswoman, but you're also a writer and you're also going to be making a documentary or working on a documentary. You're speaking and hosting events. I mean, you're sort of very multifaceted. So can you kind of speak to that? Like, it's okay to be who you are and be in multiple places. Granted, a couple of the things have to work because you have bills to pay, but you don't have to play this game where it's like, oh, pick one box and that's what you are.
I want to proceed with caution here because I think there's a little too much of like bring your whole self to work right now. And actually, I don't want to know your whole self at work. Yeah. I don't want everyone to know my whole self at work. Like, you know, keep a little mystery. But this is something I do talk about in that book, which is, you know, turning your passion into a career has consequences. And, you know, you may not get to do your passion because you're running the business of your passion. And so you really have to think it through. Like, what does it actually mean to go into business for what you're passionate about? Like if you are a maker, and you like, let's say you make hats, wouldn't that be cool if you could make a hat?
Yeah.
I would love to make a hat.
Is that called, that's not cobbler. Wasn't there a name for hat maker?
A milliner.
Milliner.
Oh my God.
Go.
That's okay. Hello Dolly. The other character is a milliner. Oh my gosh. And then I think there's a Sondheim musical about making a hat.
Maybe that's your calling is parody musicals.
Oh, listen. I'm way ahead of you on that, sir. Way ahead of you. So what were we talking about?
We were talking about being multifaceted, being,
it's okay to be. Of course.
You know, they call it Renaissance. They call it multi-potentialite.
Yeah.
So again, I mean, you can't do a little bit of everything and you have to have some focus. But, you know, I look at you, I see a very creative businesswoman.
But there was a very messy middle. And I think it's good and beneficial in the capitalist system to be interested in a lot of things early in your career, because like if I hire an admin or entry level person who is interested in a lot of things and pretty good at a lot of things, that's going to be really helpful to my business. But when you get start rising up and you get to like a middle management level, like people want specialists past a certain point, not in all industries, but that when I was job searching at that point in my career, I was like unhirable.
Sure. Same.
Yeah.
I relate to that very well.
And so like, what do we had to go into business for ourselves. And we found careers where you as an attorney, me as a consultant, we get to play in so many different sandboxes and switch gears all the time and learn about so many different businesses. So we, that itch gets scratched. But we have that main core thing that we have to keep doing. We each have a framework. So your framework is the law. My framework is, you know, how to create a game plan. And within that framework, we get to dabble in so many different areas. So it really is like the best possible outcome if you're like a multi-potentialite, which
but it's okay to be that. That's the takeaway. That when someone's feeling as if, okay, I have to just be this, you can be this, but also add a little bit of flair, creativity, or whatever your story is. You kind of, you know, bring that into the mix.
It's only in the last few years that I've been exploring this and accepting this. I came across a lot of literature on this online when I was kind of going through a low point and I was like, what am I supposed to be doing? Why am I different? And, you know, it talks about like the common frustrations and people who are more, I don't want to say it like it's a lesser thing, but people who are satisfied or more content to focus on one thing, or that's just more comfortable or something, like they won't understand you and they'll, they won't, you know, and so you feel like you're wrong.
Why don't you just do this? Why don't, this is more stable. Why don't you do that? Why don't you work your way up?
Yeah. So you feel like you're wrong and that can be different than other people not understanding you. And at the same time, because you have all these different ways of seeing the world and communicating, it's on you to help them understand what you can do. So that can be the hard thing. But I think don't just like flip the table over again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you also raised a really good point that you have to not only be good at the thing that you're doing, you have to also know that you have to be good at business or business admin. So, and this is for anybody. I mean, if you're a musician and you want it as your career, you have to be a musician who runs a business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If, you know, you want to be a commercial artist. So any, literally anything, creative, not creative. And I see it, you know, in the law, there's lawyers who are like, oh, I'm a lawyer. I can open my own law firm. And I'm like, no, you potentially can't because
then you'll be running.
You need to know that there's, you know, can you do HR and marketing and networking and all these other pieces? So I think there's an assumption with folks sometimes that like, they're just going to automatically be able to do the other part. So can you kind of speak to that? Like, what it takes to successfully run a business, regardless of the thing you're doing. So, you know, whether that's making salad dressing or being a business coach, there's the thing. And then there's also all these other pieces that have to play into that.
Yes. And I've been saying this for many years of doing workshops for people in these situations, is there's a difference between doing what you do and running a business that does what you do. So there is a famous old school business book called The E-Myth. It's by Michael Gerber, I believe. And it tells the story really well. And the kind of myth that they use in this is there's this woman who is really great at baking pies. So she opens a pie shop, but she gets burned out because running a pie shop is not just baking pies, right? It's like doing the cash register and cleaning and paying rent and you know, and so he kind of talks about the difference between baking pies and running a business that makes pies, especially if you want to scale, right?
Like you had me at pie.
I know. I'm still back on the pie thing. But I think especially, you know, since I come from the arts, I've been teaching workshops for 20 years to creative people, to artists about the difference and like, how do you hold that balance when you are the product or when you're the head of product? Which I still struggle with in my business for sure, because I know exactly how I want the product to be, but I need to run the business.
So there's also the creative pushback of if I allow other people or if I become more business oriented, I'm going to be a sellout or it's going to be too corporate or I'm going to lose my creativity. Mm-hmm. There's also this component of how do I keep who I am
that's why it's so hard to become successful in creative pursuits, because that is very difficult to balance that. It's not for everybody, and it's a very competitive field. And that is, you know, it's the game. That's the game.
How did you come up with the word pregame? Is it from loving sports? Is it?
No.
She says no.
No. Well, my last name is Pressler, so there's the pre. Game plan is already trademarked. Did my initial intellectual property due diligence. So game plan is trademarked by a consulting firm. And that was the name of my book that came out before I started my company. And so also I was a big runner in my 20s and 30s. And so my nickname was Pre, after Prefontaine. Was not a runner on that level, but it was the obvious nickname. And so it's like, okay, let's just do pregame, because pregaming is celebrating before you win, which is what we try to help people do. It makes you think
of pre-partying, like, before you go to a bar,
you're strategic.
Like, what do we have? We have a little bit of vodka. We have a lemon.
Yeah, you make it work.
Yeah.
See, that is a great analogy for what we do with organizations. Like, we're going to make this happen because we got to get ready to have fun.
So I have questions at the end that I ask. Okay. So the first question is, what's a quote or mantra that you live by?
That I live by?
Or that you like?
Oh, so many. The one that's coming to mind right now is just tell the truth. Mm. It drives me crazy when people don't tell the truth. I try to tell the truth. I can feel it when something's not fully true. Mm. And it's not like I'm consciously lying, but like, what is true? And if something's not true, I'll say, you know, I think this or I believe that. But I think we say a lot of things that are not true. Mm.
People say to be honest or believe me. And
yeah,
there's a good John Batiste song. You know, John Batiste, he has a song called Tell the Truth.
I think he's coming here really soon.
I want to go. But
let's do it.
It's like thousands of dollars. Oh, no. Maybe your mayors can figure that out. Mayors,
come on. No, but tell the truth. I mean, I think also here, you know, culturally in our area, people don't tell the truth by undermining what they say when they are. So we'll say something like, I feel like if you don't vote in May, it's like, no, that's just a true thing. If you don't vote in May, you're not affecting the election the same way.
Yeah.
So,
saying just factual statements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be clear.
Well, and it can be your truth, but you still have to be assertive in it.
Yeah.
What's a favorite childhood memory that you have?
I didn't have a childhood. I was born into teenagedom, and I remember a lot.
I just pictured you as a baby being like sassy, like, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah. I will say I definitely had like a performer personality, and I played dress up a lot, you know, like had a big imagination, and I had a little tiara because that's the only word that rhymes with my name, Ciara. And so I had a little tiara that was made of sequins, and I still have it. I still have it in my closet.
Yeah. Maybe that's a future children's book, Ciaras, Tiaras.
Yes, I like that.
Where you talk about how being a princess is about being a good person kind of thing.
Actually, someone did a book like that, and I bought it.
Shoot.
That's okay. I have no desire to go into the children's book business. Like that game. No.
What's something that at the time you thought was a failure or a mistake, but it ended up working for the best?
Oh, gosh. I almost never think of anything as a failure or mistake, because I am in the habit of turning things around. But I will say, when COVID hit and we had to move out of our location where everything in pregame was in person, and we had to move everything online, it was the beginning of my business becoming an actual business. Everything changed in 2020 in my business, ultimately for the better. And I know 2020 was hard for a lot of people. It was hard for me too, but it gave me permission to do things differently, and I hadn't given myself permission.
Probably also more time to reflect, because you're so busy in the moment. You didn't have a moment of, can I do this completely different, or do I just have to go and do the thing that I've been doing?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember talking to you a bunch.
Yeah, we had each other's backs.
Yeah, for sure.
It was a good time. You really found out who your friends were.
Definitely. And then who would you have dinner with, alive or dead, if you could?
Oh, Jay-Z.
Yeah?
Yeah.
H sure. to the Izzo?
Yeah, absolutely. Huge fan.
Yeah. And then finally, you know, give some shout outs to people in the community and then tell folks how they can find you or support your endeavors.
Yeah, I'm thinking of all the people where it's like their first name. You say their first name, people know who you're talking about. Cyrilda, Rakaya, D'Artagnan, oh, Steven, yeah. You know, like all these people. I want to shout out also, you know, all the City of Portland bureau directors that I've had a chance to work with, and some of them I haven't, but I've been able to meet. And like,
where are my bureau directors at?
I've got a lot of, this will be my hip hop album. Yeah, but like, they are smart people, and we're really lucky to have them in leadership. And gosh, I really hope that this new form of government takes some of their obstacles out of the way, because they're smart and they're wise and they're strategic, and we need to let them do their jobs.
I was trying to think if you could make bureau rhyme with hero.
Oh yeah, I totally could
do it somehow. It's a forced rhyme, but you got it.
Yeah, I got it.
And then how can people find you and get involved?
Well, my business is Pregame. It's at pregamehq.com. The handle is pregamehq on all the socials. I'm personally at The Mayoress. And you can also check out Portland Tea Party at portlandteaparty.com and at Portland Tea Party on the socials.
It's great. And people in Portland are going to start calling you mother.
How about auntie?
Auntie, there you go. thank you so much for all the work you do in our community and for being my friend. I'm happy that you did this podcast. Thank you.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
I am. You're amazing. And
you.
Yes. And we got to keep each other pumped up.
Thank you. That means a lot.
I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you.
Yes.
Now we're going to embrace. Thank you all.
Vulnerable, unfiltered. Thank you for listening to All of Your Business podcast hosted by Michael Jonas. This show is produced by Kyle Gilmer of Residual Audio. Music written and recorded by Luke Neal at Track 11 Music. Special thanks to X-Ray.fm. You can listen to X-Ray FM live streaming online everywhere at X-Ray.fm. Radio is yours. Listen to every All of Your Business episode, past and future, on your favorite podcatcher app. You can also find every episode on allofyourbusinesspodcast.com.